individual.
A servo skull opened chromium-plated jaws. A compact hololithic projector emerged with a click and sketched a poor-quality light sculpt of a heavily augmented adept into the space between them. Call peered at it.
You do not recognize this individual,
barked the actuary again.
He is a member of the cult destructor of the Myrmidonae.
Call peered some more.
You do not recognize it.
The actuary seemed almost disappointed.
Your case is suspended.
Wait, give me a moment, said Call.
He looks familiar, but it's hard to tell because your projection matrix is very badly aligned, if I'm completely honest, and the resolution is, quite frankly, as one adept to another, very low.
The actuary squalled in irritation.
Do you recognize him or not?
Yes,
said Call, and sat back. The manacles binding his wrists to either side of the chair clinked.
I do. I fought alongside him and his Myrmidon clade on Trizulian A4, in the Agrafields, before Hester Aspertia Sigma Sigma turned traitor and handed over control to the Warmaster. They saved me from the Night Lords. I repaired one of his followers.
Did you do so from gratitude, or was it a cloak for treachery?
I was doing my duty.
Call's jaw clenched so tightly it hurt.
We were fighting the traitors.
The actuary emitted a pleased bleep.
Do you know his designation?
I, said Call. No, I don't. I'm sure he canted it to me, but I've had a few data purges since then, most of them at the hands of your careless staff.
They are investigatory exlodes, not purges.
You should try telling that to your adepts, said Call. My augment hurts. I didn't even know that was possible.
Your memcore is non-standard. There have been difficulties.
Yes, well, but it did work. Now it does not.
Then you do not recall him?
Not digitally, no. But I remember him in the organic sense. Why? Is he a traitor, too? Is this more evidence to damn me in the Adeptus Mechanicus's eyes? I've told you before, I didn't even know the war was over when we got here. I'm telling you the truth.
We took this image from your own memcore.
So why are you asking if I remembered him?
Call said, tetchily. All his meetings with the actuary tended to follow the same maddeningly circuitous logic.
As part of the judicial process against apostate members of the cult Mechanicus, all data is being harvested and will be kept for all time. By the will of the Omnissiah, motive force and machine god, let it be. This individual was contacted regarding your supposed innocence.
And,
said Call, wearily, who wanted to get it all over with.
His name is Theodolus Palliser. He is of cult hierophant rank within the Destructor Brotherhoods.
That is his current rank?
Asked Call.
Yes,
said the actuary, smugly.
That is quite a high rank? Hazarded Call.
Yes,
said the actuary.
And he is not a traitor,
said Call. A servo skull floated down close to Call's face and looked him straight in the eye.
Far from it. He is Belisarius Call, a war hero,
it said. The skull's innards flashed in time with its words. The servo skull floated back up. A bank of machines behind the desk made a noisy clattering.
He vouched for you. Your story has been subjected to the 9th degree of Inquisition. It holds up.
The actuary took a pompous pause.
By the power vested in me by the ruling Synod of Risa, who in turn draw their authority from the most holy auspices of the machine god himself, you are free to go.
The manacles fell open and dropped to the floor with a clatter. Call rubbed his wrists. The manacles had caught on his wrist port, and the skin around the implant was sore.
Where do I go?
That is not my concern. My concern is your guilt. You have been judged innocent. You are no longer my responsibility.
The door swung open on silent hinges.
Please depart. But I've never been to Riser before. Not my concern. Give me something, please. I can't just walk out of here into a world I know nothing about. Not my concern. You will depart now.
The Actuary Judicium servoskulls detached with 7 metallic rasps. Trailing cables, they flew off to their charging roosts while the brain jar spiraled down slowly back into the desk.
Wait! Goodbye, Belisarius Call, said the actuary.
Its vox skull settled into its charging roost and spoke no more. The jar slid home with a pop of air. A heavily armed servitor stepped into the doorway and pointed a radium carbine at Call's head.
I get the message.
Call stared at the desk. A look of dawning realization spread over his face.
What about Friedisch?
Call felt incredibly guilty when he saw where they'd been keeping his friend. As acolytum and not an ordained adept, Friedisch had been confined to an overcrowded common cell block with all manner of mechanicus dregs. The room stank of unwashed bodies, decaying organic components and old oil so rank it made Call cough. He was led past steel cages full of malfunctioning servitors and renegade tech thralls who had somehow wormed their way out from under the control of their overseer programming. Badly maintained stasis tanks holding more dangerous beings buzzed noisily. People shouted and blurted obscene streams of anti-logic at him as he walked past. The same contra-communications technologies that had hemmed in his cell made an inviolable wall around this block too, but amplified to block dozens of minds from the Rizan Nuosphere. It was crippling. Oppressive magnetic waves slowed his mind, disrupting the interface between augmetic and the human body. He felt sick, sleepy, irritable, and madly gleeful all at once.
What an awful place, he muttered to himself.
The Skitari Alpha who led him to Friedisch's cell was specially modified to be unaffected by the data wall. He stopped and gestured into another cage. Within, a circle of low rankers sat on the floor around a chalked circuitry diagram and were arguing loudly with each other about its design. Friedisch was among them. He had his back to the door.
Friedisch, Call said gently.
Call?
Friedisch turned to look at him. He had lost weight, and the irritation around his ocular augmetic was worse than ever.
We're free, you and I.
Call gave him a tight smile.
Let's get out of here.
Friedisch smiled back. Now.
Interesting,
said Belisarius Call. His augmetic eye flared as he came awake.
Very interesting indeed.
His huge augmented body hauled itself out of the maintenance dock. Cables disconnected themselves and whipped back into the armoured housing. As he moved forwards, he uncurled, extending himself to his full, magnificent height. Call emerged from the dock unclothed, showing the array of mechanisms he had appended to his body over the millennia. His torso was the most human part of him remaining, and even then, only the uppermost part of that remained flesh. Exposed bone meshed with adamantium, his withered skin puckered around the augmetics. His flesh was as necessary to him as an overcoat, nothing more than that. He kept it mainly for sentimental reasons. In his mummified chest cavity, blue light shone from active organs, each one superior in every way to the original. His ribs were bonded directly to armor plates, protecting the main interface between lower assembly and torso, which sat proudly on a long underbody, and that was completely mechanical and entirely non-humanoid. Numerous legs moved him. Fringes of data cables followed along behind him like a bridal train of madly tapping metal tentacles. He was a centroid arthropod topped by a man's face wrinkled by a life more than 10 millennia long. Tufts of white hair stuck up from his scalp. Scar tissue shone around interface ports. He swayed about, wafting the scent of old skin and counterseptic gels around him. It was a stale and astringent morgue smell. By any definition of human, Call was a monstrosity.
What is interesting, Master?
A lone Primaris space marine stood guard over Call's instrument dock. Though it was the Space Marine's duty to wake the Archmagos, no action taken on his part had brought the ancient call back to life. The Archmagos required no help. Other people were, at most, witnesses to his existence. An audience. It was always he who acted. The Space Marine's function in the process was largely ceremonial.
"Visions," said Kool.
At odds with his body, his voice retained its humanity and his old enthusiasm.
"Memories, to be more precise. Recollections I thought lost. Indeed were lost."
Kool clattered past the Space Marine, who followed him with soulful, sad eyes. The warrior was heavily scarred, appearing cut up and stuck back together in haste. His armour bore no heraldry, but was the pale, unpainted gunmetal grey of raw ceramite.
"What does it mean, Master?"
The Space Marine fell in behind Kool as the Archmagos passed through a maze of machinery. Not all Kool's laboratories were this untidy, far from it, but when the Archmagos required inspiration and adopted a more chaotic persona, he preferred this workspace over his others.
"Mean? Mean? It's a little early to ask about meaning, Alpha Primus," said Kool.
Servo Skull swooped down from the forest of machines covering the high ceiling and took up guard around Kool. Long cables whipped about under them, hanging from the places their spinal columns should have been, eager to plug into his body. They were premature, and Kool waved them away. He paused at an armoire, reached for and pulled on Magos's robes. They draped over him, hiding the greater part of his machinery. Then he took a cloak to cover what was left of his organic body, hiding his head beneath its deep hood. Mechanical limbs mounted on podiums bent at awkward angles to fiddle with the robes, seating them properly around his input ports. The sacred red of Mars in place, Kool paused below a winch and waited with impatient, tapping claws for his upper assembly to be lowered from above. Armour plates clasped his shoulders, their link spikes mating with the ports running down his back. The spinal sensor vein locked into place with a loud clunk. Then his power unit slotted itself carefully into place, the long arm that bore it retreating silently. Kool was away again before the core had locked itself firm. Indicator lumens blinked as the reactor spooled up and filled his augmetics with fresh might. Busy feet clacked on the deck. His lower assembly rippled with their motion, but like the furious paddling of the mythical swan of old Earth, down below was all activity, while his upper portion glided on serenely. As he passed through the workshop, more parts of him were reattached. Extra limbs, field generators, diagnostic tools, everything he thought he might need for the expedition to Sotha. To his jaw, he attached one of his augmeter arrays, this one mounting an atmospheric shield generator. Powerful magnets caught as he slipped it in place. He held out an arm and his great omniscient axe came blurring across the room, ringing on his metal palm. Clusters of armour plates floated down, layering themselves over the robes of his lower assembly, clamping onto the hips of his many legs.
"You were not expecting any such visions?" asked Alpha Primus.
Kool laughed.
"My dear boy, do not play the ignoramus with me. I made you far too intelligent to flatter me for the sake of it. You already know what is happening. We discussed this. Use that transhuman mind of yours to its fullest extent."
He turned back and grinned over his mouthpiece.
"I'm far more impressed by the brilliance of my own creations than I am by toadying. You know that."
His voice distorted as his augmeter went through functionality checks, voicing the Magos' words in numerous languages and a grating squeal of binaric. Alpha Primus looked up to the ceiling, an expression that could easily have turned into an eye roll.
"It is the mountain. It is speaking to you already," said Alpha Primus.
"Exactly," said Kool,
pointing at his servant with an assortment of fingers. He rattled up to a stasis tube. From inside, a tall metal mechanoid being stared out with a single glass eye. The being was shut down as well as suspended in time, but it gave off an air of awareness even so. Kool put his face up close to the glass.
"Thanks to what I learned from our friend here, my new implants function perfectly. First contact with the machines of the ancients. Primus, it is deeply fascinating.
I'd accounted for the possibility of transwarp capabilities of the device, but even so...
He shook his head in admiration.
Such art. I have successfully achieved long-range preliminary interface. In return, the mountain is bringing the past back to life.
He turned away from his guest and clattered on.
If you consider, most of my memories are hidden from me, lost for all time. But the past exists still in absolute terms. Time is a river. The mouth and source are there, even if you cannot see them. Incredible that the quantum empathy of the device should be able to effortlessly tune my energetic state to be able to receive past emanations of my waveform, all without recourse to the Empyrean.
He held up a finger tipped with a three-pronged data robe.
We have so much to learn from them. Such pure science. Such mastery of the material. This is only the beginning, Alpha Primus. Only the beginning.
If you say so, Master.
Such mordancy, Call said. You are pleasingly sarcastic.
I was not attempting wit, Master, Alpha Primus said. I simply do not comprehend you.
Call chuckled. He had reached the armory space of the laboratorium. He held up his primary and secondary arm sets, exposing the interface sockets for his tertiary limbs.
Now, guns, what shall I take? Something ranged, something for close-in work on this expedition. Something deadly. What do you think?
Whatever you deem fit. Perhaps your favored choice, Master. The ones you always take.
Even I'm allowed to have favorites, Alpha Primus. Bring them down.
Primus threw a giant switch. Call beamed as his arc scourge and solar atomizer were lowered down and pushed into place. They spun about and fired up, making numerous clicks and purrs as they self-tested. The reactor's hum climbed a note. With his weapons in place, Belisarius' call was done. He held aloft all his arms, probes, weapons, and mechadendrites.
How do I look?
Fearsome, Master, said Alpha Primus.
That's the right answer.
Call hunched down.
Master?
Yes, Alpha Primus.
What did you remember? What did the mountain show you?
Call became subdued.
Something that happened a very long time ago, Alpha. It showed me my friend.
Neither of them spoke. The buzz of Call's cybernetics filled the space.
We must be on our guard, Call said eventually. The device is more powerful than I thought. I let myself open up to it, and I'm glad that the interface functions.
He tapped his skull.
But I must be careful I'm not too open. I've shut down most of my sub-minds so that I may concentrate.
He pulled a face.
I'm beginning to wonder if I did not choose the wrong persona for this mission after all.
Which one did you select for your primary consciousness? Asked Primus. Out of curiosity, Master.
Can you not tell?
My facility for reading human personalities is somewhat blunted, said Primus.
Oh, said Call, sounding almost disappointed. Well, I shall tell you. Optimistic, avuncular, and sharp. Three defining characteristics are enough for today, I think.
Another of your favorite combinations.
Absolutely, said Call. We are going to see young Decimus after all.
Chapter 4. Zarquesitor. Circa 7,000 years ago. Felix was strapped to a wheeled bier being pushed down freezing corridors. The ship knew no end. He imagined it going on forever and ever, a vast, deadly place of ice and pain. Silence lay on everything, thick as the methylon fogs swirling across the deck. Cold gripped his limbs and his organs, penetrating his body to an extent that he knew instinctively should have killed him. He could not see the stretcher bearers who pushed him. They were men-machines of great strength, but though terrible, they would not hurt him. They left that to the monster. Once he had escaped from an examination room and roamed the ship. His brief hours of freedom ended when he had spoken with the creature. It had been kind then. The torments it inflicted in the years afterwards made Felix hate it. The monster promised that one day the pain would be over, and every time they spoke it reiterated its promise that he, Decimus Androdinus Felix, would rise to be a great servant of the Emperor. Every time he woke, he hoped the promise would be fulfilled. Each period of sleep gave way to more lies, more torment. He would never be done. He would be trapped for all time. And yet, there was nothing he could do. If he moved overly much, he would be drugged. He preferred to remain awake, so he remained still. The periods between the procedures were eternities of cold, where time crept by like a thief, stealing away his existence in tiny, agonizing morsels that were yet centuries in size. He wanted to see all he could before hibernation was forced on him again. He came awake quickly. That was commented on, and he thought commended by the monster as a sign of strength. He was perfectly conscious long before they left the great suspension holds. Every time he was awoken, he watched the stasis caskets roll by him in near infinite number. The hold was an oblate sphere, every surface covered by the caskets. They were clear, blue, and luminous, the boys inside embedded in gels so thick only their silhouettes were visible against the machinery's glow. No features discernible, but the aspect of their rest, some contorted in fear, others slumbering peacefully, each one of them plugged into the life support devices by a thick umbilicus that plunged into their guts. Lanes radiated out from central points on ceiling and floor. Floor and ceiling were purely relative terms. False gravity enabled efficient use of space aboard the giant ship. Beers the same as Felix's were being pushed along above him. Not many, each isolated from the others by many hundreds of ranks of the pods. Their passengers were the same as he, more boys going to more rooms for more pain. He knew where he was going. He knew it would hurt, but he was not afraid, not even then. He counted the pods as he always did. His position never changed. He was 9,863 rows in. There was something comforting about that. If his situation never differed, physically he was changing. Every time he came out of the pod, he was bigger. He felt great strength in his limbs. His mind ran quicker. The drugs wore off faster. The monster chuckled at all this indulgently, pleased with his progress, before hurting him again.
"I am making you strong. I am making you a fitting servant for the Omnissiah. One day you will thank me for this, Decimus," the monster always said. "Not now, I know, and I am sorry, but you will, and perhaps one day you and I might be friends."
The monster's apologies didn't stop it from inflicting pain. The last rows of glass capsules were passing by. At the edges of the hold, the tips of the caskets on the ceiling and floor were only a few yards apart. He stared at the shadows of the sleeping boys. From the hold, it was a 97-second journey to the examination rooms, where the pain began. There, the monster would be waiting for him, with a smile and hand made of agony. Its name was Belisarius Call. Now. Felix came awake with a pained groan. He rarely bothered with full sleep. There was simply too much to do. But once his inspection of the Ejida had been concluded, the wait for the arrival of the Archmagos Dominus stretched on, and he found himself indulging in human habits he usually neglected. Catalepsian sleep was supposed to be a stopgap replacement, after all, and not a substitute for natural slumber entirely. It had been even longer since he had dreamed.
"Nightmare," he corrected himself. "No more sleep," he said grimly.
He swung his legs over the edge of the cot and leaned heavily on the edge. Massive transhuman hands gripped metal. The sides of the bed were an inch thick, but he could bend it easily. Call had not lied to him about making him strong. He was not sure if he was thankful for that or not. He put the dream down to a combination of unusual factors. The waiting, the emotional effect of the dead world, Thracian's melancholy, the pressures of his role. He was a space marine, but he was still a man, as he told himself often. With a grunt, he shoved himself upright, padded over the freezing deck plates, and poured himself a glass of water. The chamber had been some sort of stateroom before the fall of Sotha, and though large, it made for an uncomfortable berth. It was too big, too ornate. His bed had to be huge to accommodate him, and there was no space where it fit neatly. There were precious few operational chambers aboard the Ejida. Far more comfortable quarters were available on the Lord of Vespeta, but Felix insisted on staying on the orbital. He wished to keep an eye on the size of the Emperor. Cadmus's misgivings seemed justified. There was something not right about them. Even so, they were of secondary concern as of the moment, for it was Call's servants he deemed more needful of watching. He gulped the water down. It was so cold it stung his throat, and it tasted of harsh chemicals. Gilliman had commanded him personally to follow Call. The Archmagos Dominus had been infuriatingly elusive these last years. Gilliman's calls that Call return to his side had been rebuffed or ignored. Now a meeting with Felix's old tormentor was at hand. Gilliman wanted answers, and Felix had been charged with getting them. Felix was not sure how he felt about that either. His war gear was held in a makeshift armory Daedalus had set up at one side of the room. He left his armor on its stand and dressed himself in a loose tunic and trousers, pulled on his boots, and belted his bolt pistol around his waist. It was freezing in the station, but he didn't feel it, and besides, nowhere was as cold as those millennia on board Call's vessel. It was good to be out of his armor for a while. He had a loathing of confinement. Call's servants had begun their work at the center of the station, and so all the functioning parts of the Ejida were around the hub, between the command center and the middle ring corridor. For the moment, the outer areas remained open to the void, but work proceeded at surprising pace. He passed numerous machines and servitors as he walked the middle ring. Plasma torches burned brightly as glassy-eyed dead men welded plates into place. Temporary repairs, but each crude replacement further extended the portion of the station that could hold an atmosphere. Semi-autonomous drones wriggled in and out of crawl spaces under the deck. Felix grimaced as a disgusting example scurried past his feet. In form, it resembled a many-legged arachnid, but it was human, for on its back, in a scratched armor glass tank, a brain bobbed in nutrient medium. Mechanicus technology repulsed him. His own war gear, and indeed his own enhanced physique, were aesthetically pleasing, examples of the best of human artistry, and yet the devices the Adeptus Mechanicus made for their own use were uniformly ugly, without adornment or often even casings to hide their inner mechanisms. He supposed this preference came from their desire to see their machines at work. Perhaps that should have made him trust them more. There was an honesty to naked cogs and wires, but he could not. He was a child of the old Imperium, born thousands of years ago as the Emperor's own dreams began their slow descent into nightmare, and the stranglehold the Martian cult held over technology now disturbed him. Despite their bizarre ways, the priests were effective. A fortnight had passed since his arrival at the Ejida. Where before he had been obliged to walk in void-sealed battle armor, now he could go simply clad. He turned right onto the command deck axial way, into a construction zone of even greater activity. There, the technological prowess on display was undeniable. The principal doors to the command deck were free of the temporary airlock, a new one having been installed at the far end of the corridor. This would also be removed later, but for now it enabled proper repairs to be made to the approach. Makeshift fixers were being swapped out for permanent replacements. The old blast doors had been removed and had already been replaced with freshly cast adamantium portals. Heavy bolters swiveled meaningfully in new gimbal turrets. All along the corridor, dozens of servitors were at work in clanking unison, directed by Kvo 87's tech priests. Felix's Genhunt sensors were forced to compensate for the glare of sparks and piercing whine of power tools. Entry to the command deck was quick and smooth. A new machine voice welcomed him from a shrine panel to the left. The doors opened soundlessly. It was a glimpse of how the station should be, but it was gone as soon as the doors rolled away, for the command deck was still a mess. Even so, the activity within was intense as Kvo 87 pushed his minions to return the Ejida to life. Felix wasn't surprised to see Tronchus and Daedalus at work in the chamber. They were as bored as the rest of his chosen, and had skills Kvo 87 was pleased to exploit. The presence of an armoured Thracian was, however, unexpected. He was deep in discussion with Kvo 87. He seemed to have shed some of his somber mood and was enthusiastically describing how he saw the strategic instrumentation of the deck laid out. Felix stepped around a juddering wheeled servitor and joined the chapter master and the tech priest.
"I was ready to condemn this platform, Magos," said Felix. "I did not think it could be made good for use."
"All things may be repaired, my Lord Tetrarch," said Kvo, somewhat smugly. "One should be cautious before abandoning resources."
"Noted. I will remember," said Felix.
"In the same way as the battered Imperium can and will be returned to glory, this station shall rise from decrepitude," Kvo 87 said. "All praise, he who is three in one."
"I would not have believed it myself," said Thracian, wonderingly. "It is good that it pleases you," said Felix. "Your chapter has suffered."
Thracian nodded.
"We would maintain a watch here if we could. Sotha will likely never be whole enough to dwell upon, but it was our charge for millennia. I do not wish to abandon the duty of ages."
"Likely never," thought Felix.
A strange choice of words to use for a dead world. "Likely never" betokened uncertainty about its situation. Uncertainty suggested Thracian had hope. Theoretical, he postulated. Does Thracian believe Sotha can be reborn? For his practical, Felix's mind went instantly to Call. It puzzled him a little how eagerly the Scythes of the Emperor had allowed Call access to Sotha. Granted, he thought, the Scythes hold the Archmagos in high esteem for returning their chapter to full strength. But the speed, the lack of ceremony, the desperation in Thracian's manner. He could only wonder, what had the Archmagos Dominus promised Thracian?
"You appear distracted, Tetrarch. Is all well with you?" Thracian asked.
Felix realized he was staring at the other space marine. He shook his concerns off with a smile.
"I dreamed. Its meaning eludes me."
"You are human. All humans dream. Few humans can find meaning in them." "I do not sleep frequently, and when I do, I rarely dream," said Felix. "When I do dream, it is generally related to the events of the day."
"But not now."
"Today I dreamed of long ago," he said, and left it at that. "I desire a report on the reconstruction of the orbital," he said to Kvo 87.
"I will provide an oral submission," Kvo 87 said, and his voice took on the droning delivery of a non-sentient device. "I have stabilized the secondary power cores. Repairs to the primary are almost complete, and once a suitable supply of initiator fuel is available, I will commence re-sanctification prior to reignition. I've concentrated my efforts on the hub of the station. It is the oldest part, holier than the periphery, with machine spirits of rare sorts. Power and life support are now available in all 10 sections of the hub. Soon I will commence with the installation of new instrumentation on the command deck. Thereafter, I shall shift my servants' attentions to..." Kvo 87 stopped speaking, his head cocked on his banded augmetic neck. "Report interrupt. Forgive me. Wait," he said. His voice took on a more human tone. From the partially restored desks of machinery, an alarm set up. Dalus sauntered over to a console and glanced at a display.
"Etheric monitor. Something's coming in. Something big."
He looked more closely.
"Throne of Terror. Something extremely big."
Micro-tremors shook the station. A spanner crawled across a workbench. It skittered across the surface and dropped with a clang to the floor. Felix stared at the rattling tool. His face betrayed his irritation.
"Stand ready," said Felix.
He grasped a railing and set his feet wide.
"He's not going to do it, is he?"
Dalus asked Troncus. Troncus shrugged.
"Lord Felix," Dalus said. "He will do it," said Felix.
"Honored Tetrarch, would you expect anything less from the Archmagos Dominus?" said Kvo 87.
"Rash, as always," said Felix. "Call may style himself the savior of the Imperium, but his grandstanding puts us all at risk."
"The Archmagos Dominus," said Thracian. "He is coming."
All over the command deck, loose items bounced across the metal.
"Brace yourselves, all of you," ordered Felix.
"What is happening?" Thracian demanded.
"The Archmagos approaches," said Kvo-87, with an apologetic smile.
"Call is attempting an in-system real space translation," said Felix. "Here, by the station."
"That's insane," said Thracian.
"Many and glorious are the technologies of the Archmagos Dominus Belisarius. Call, all will be well. You shall see,"
said Kvo-87 with a zealot's fervour. The alarm shrieked. Servitors all around the bridge went into emergency shutdown. Purple sparks leapt over the exposed metal deck, and a throbbing roar built throughout the station's fabric.
"Throne!" shouted Thracian. "He's coming in right by us!"
"All will be well," repeated Kvo-87.
Gravity ceased to obey natural law. Tools floated upwards. Through the field-sealed rent in the hull, Felix watched the sky fill with the curdled oil colours of imminent warp breach. The void tore. Wicked light scorched his eyes. He tasted bitterness, exultation, and the distillation of regret. A torrent of pleading voices flooded his mind. With a great flat flash of lightning, a gargantuan ship appeared by the Ejida. Black fire flickered around its outline. Corpuscent streamed off its every angle. Then the warp breach collapsed in on itself. Tools clattered down. The hideous babbling ceased. All returned to normal. A lone alarm pinged over and over again. Felix relaxed his white-knuckle grip. Kvo's augmetics flashed, setting the servitors back into motion. The men machines continued exactly where they had left off, as if nothing had happened. A vast red craft occupied the space between the Ejidan platform and the surface of ravaged Sotha. It was a vessel like no other, one of the rare Arc Mechanicus Explorator vessels, and even among those behemoths it was reckoned large for its kind, a vast city in space, bristling with weapons, and containing manufacturing and research laboratoria beneath its adamantium skin to rival a forge world. Felix knew it only too well, having spent the best part of 10 millennia imprisoned inside its holds. A legend emblazoned in Lingua Technis Hierophant proudly proclaimed its name. Zar Quasitor, the ship, home and research facility of Belisarius Call. Chapter 5. The Three Ursine Hypothesis. Felix stood by the forward left access ramp of the Overlord. The hangar was cramped with space marines, servitors and tech priests, all attempting to get their equipment aboard his ship. Felix insisted on a low-key initial insertion, not wishing to awaken Tyranid rearguard organisms or trip the Fortress Monastery's auto-defences, should any remain operational. The Overlord was a large dropship, more than capable of taking Kvo's cadre of tech priests and Thracian's men. Getting them aboard in an orderly manner was taxing his chosen. He watched the Zar Quasitor through the small portion of the hangar aperture visible past the Overlord. Call's acolytes were still streaming across from the Ark in lines of shuttlecraft. They flooded the Ejidan orbital, greatly adding to those already working under Kvo-87. The derelict orbital rang to the sounds of industry from all quarters. On the other side of the partition dividing the hangar, the Adeptus Mechanicus were hard at work, and vibrations from their efforts shook the deck plates. Past the Overlord's stubby wings, Felix saw a hull section prefabricated in the holds of the Zar Quasitor emerging from foundry gates. Bathed in the glaring light of the Ark's forge decks, the section drifted forwards unpowered until small fleets of servitor craft fell in around it, snared it with cabling, and commenced dragging it towards the platform.
"My lord," Thracian interrupted him, "we've nearly finished loading our equipment."
Four of the veteran scythes of the Emperor were escorting a Methylon casket up the right-hand access ramp. Tech priests loading their own materials stopped and offered prayers to the device. Heavy vapours streamed down from exhaust vents, curling in strangely regular patterns in the suspensor fields holding the casket above the ground. The casket was of a different sort to those aboard Call's ship, but close enough that its presence chilled Felix's hearts.
"Geno vaults," said Felix. "You are bringing your gene seed with us."
"That of the older space marines, once the lifeblood of my chapter," Thracian looked pained. "Now a relic I must lay to rest.
It is useless now it has been superseded, but it is worthy of our respect still. I wish to take it to the Vault of Heroes and see it properly interred, along with the remains of my fallen brothers. It was clear that this was not the whole truth. Before Felix could press Thracian further, the heavy tread of a Primaris space marine approached from behind. His signum broadcast indicated he was an ally. He was not, however, one of Felix's own.
"Alpha Primus," said Felix, and turned around to face Call's giant.
"I will see to the final loading of my warriors," Thracian said, excusing himself. Primus watched the other leave with sad eyes.
"You called for me, Tetrarch," he said dourly, when Thracian was gone.
Alpha Primus was like no other space marine Felix had seen. He was huge, even by Primaris standards, and a strange-looking individual in many other ways. There was a coppery sheen to his pale, horribly scarred skin. His eyes were black, with just a hint of white around huge pupils. His habitually shaved head and chin were dark with fast-growing stubble. There was an air of great potency around him that set Felix on guard whenever they met. Primus's embassy in Call's stead was irritating and insulting. Felix had never liked the man, and his presence provoked painful memories. Call had yet to show his face in person. Felix wanted more than anything to get that meeting over with. He was therefore short-tempered.
"Where is the Archmagos?" said Felix. "When will he inform us what he intends?"
Primus stared down at him lugubriously.
"You ask me again, my lord. I can only say he will meet you on the surface, as I have already relayed."
His lips were plump and purplish, always downturned, giving him a saturnine expression. It suited his soul, thought Felix.
"The Archmagos Dominus has many preparations to make before we descend."
Felix looked out to the Tsar Quaesitor and its fleet of attendant ships. The void was alive around it.
"Tell him again that the Primarch Rubute Gilliman has given me express orders that he is to report to me immediately. The Archmagos has been out of direct contact for years. In the absence of regular communications, the Lord Regent expects a full report from me on Call and his activities soon." "It will all become clear, I am sure," said Primus, unenthusiastically. "I am powerless to compel him to attend you."
A vox chime announced word from the command deck, where Daedalus had assumed charge, while Thracian's men prepared for the return to Sotha.
"Tetrarch, there's something about to happen on Call's ship."
"Details," Felix demanded.
"I'd give them if I had them. I'm reading an immense power surge from the Tsar Quaesitor's reactors. The most likely theoretical is that he is about to open fire on Sotha. But there's something more behind it. I'll run further scans to see if I can find out, but the vessel has every auger baffle known to man."
Felix rounded on Primus.
"I told you to tell him that this mission was to be undertaken cautiously."
Primus stared back at him sadly. Daedalus voxed again.
"My lord, it's not just weapons. Can you see the front of the Ark?" said the Tech Marine.
"Not from this position."
"I would take a look outside if I were you. I don't think you'll like what Call's doing."
Felix made a noise of annoyance and ducked under the Overlord's drooping prows. In a half-crouch, to allow him to pass under the central fuselage, he made his way to the hangar entrance, where he stood tall again under the Overlord's thruster arrays, just inside the atmospheric field.
"By the throne," swore Felix.
The Tsar Quaesitor was coming apart. Its blunt, aggressive bow was detaching, revealing itself as a self-contained subsidiary vessel. It was but a part of the Ark, but large in its own right, big enough to land lances of knights, thought Felix. Clamps came free, and puffs of gas burst all round it to push it from its housing. It slid along and then off a connecting arm, pipes and cables popping free and reeling themselves into the larger part of the Ark. Alpha Primus emerged with difficulty from underneath the Overlord.
"Do you care to explain what your master is doing?" said Felix.
"I do not know what he's doing. I can only apologize," said Alpha Primus. "What more can I do?" Belisarius Call is as Belisarius Call does. He is the prime conduit of the Omnisire, a law unto himself.
Hundreds of servitor escort craft streamed out of the Ark's hangars and flew after the giant lander. Unhindered by atmosphere, the flotilla proceeded at a steady pace towards the surface.
"If there is anything down there, it is now aware we are coming," said Felix.
"And if any part of the Fortress Monastery's defense matrix remains active, he risks triggering it."
"I am sure my master has taken that into account," said Alpha Primus.
"Lord Felix, the Zarquisitor's weapons are charged and are about to open fire."
Huge energy cannons pushed themselves out of gun ports all along the ventral line of the ship. They fired as one, sectioning a large area around Mount Pharos with a square of brilliant white light.
"I see," said Alpha Primus. "Neutron beamers. Anything around the landing zone will have been instantly killed," he said.
"I would not worry. My master has an answer for everything."
"Yes," said Felix, annoyed by his reaction to Call's behavior. "So it appears to you."
"It was the way he made me," said Primus.
Felix pushed past the bigger space marine and returned to the confusion around the front of the Overlord, where he waited to be away after Call. By the time the Overlord was loaded with Quo-87's equipment, Call had already been on the ground for 2 hours. Felix's temper strained to the point that he was set on challenging Quo about the delay and accusing him of keeping them back purposefully, but just as he resolved to do so, Quo-87 came to him with many apologies and assurances that all was done, citing the gathering up, reprogramming and loading of rare marks of servitor that could not be left behind as the reason for his tardiness. So it was that finally Daedalus eased the Overlord out of its cramped nest and set it on the way to the surface. Felix and Thracian rode in the cockpit, despite Comnenus's habitual misgivings about the risk.
"He would keep me in a box if he could," Felix confessed to Thracian.
The Overlord ventured once more into the void. From outside, they saw that the repairs to the main hangar on the station underside were close to completion. That was a far greater space and much better suited to a gunship of the Overlord's size class than the smaller subsidiary dock.
"It will be easier getting back into the station," said the Tech Marine. "Quo-87 works fast."
"It is a marvel and a gift that the Adeptus Mechanicus provide us," said Thracian.
Felix felt little of the gratitude Thracian did. Call could grant him every technological favor in the galaxy, and it would never be enough to make up for the years Felix spent as his test subject. Until Felix had got his meeting with Call out of the way, he would find no peace. It was always that way, whenever they encountered one another. With great impatience, he watched Sothar approach. All trace of atmosphere had been ripped away by the Hive fleet. Although the system's other worlds had been touched, they had been but lightly, with minor harvestings of the two gas giants and cometary cloud. Living worlds always suffered the most, for the Tyranids ever sought genetic material over baser forms of sustenance. Nothing remained alive on the surface of Sothar. From high orbit, it looked like a barren garden patch with a few handfuls of dry stalks poking from the dust. As the Overlord descended, these resolved themselves into the lacy remains of feeding towers. The fleshy parts had been stripped from them, leaving behind the mineral structure that held them aloft. This was durable, keeping a portion of the feeding towers upright even without their musculature and flesh tethers, and evidently problematic enough for the Hive fleet to reabsorb that it was left behind. Other than these alien additions, the world was bizarrely pristine. Once more, Felix was reminded of a model created to show planetary geology. The details of the world's topography were exposed. Never had he seen a continental shelf or oceanic plain so clearly displayed, other than on a geologian's orb. The Overlord roared over the flatness of the empty seas towards Sothopolis, the world's capital and only city of significant size, above whose airless streets Mount Pharos reared high. Picked files flickering through Felix's retinal displays showed Sothar to be verdant. All that was gone, devoured.
"They left only stone," Thracian said grimly. The chapter master was shaken in a way one would not expect of the Adeptus Astartes. This was his homeworld, and its protection had been his chapter's prime duty. Rarely would a space marine be confronted with a failure this complete, and seeing Sotha so denuded, Felix shared some of his shock. They came in obliquely towards Sothopolis. Felix's wargear cogitator used the Picts to superimpose emerald oceans over the cracked stone, and he saw the world simultaneously as it was and as it had been. Plains of dry seas rose from depths to shallows, and finally to the shore, where wealthy districts once enjoyed far-reaching ocean views, and now blind windows gazed at empty immensities. Felix had seen a few worlds ravaged by the Tyranids. They were lamentably common in the east of Greater Ultramar, but somehow Sotha was particularly awful. Everywhere were signs that this had been a thriving, life-rich world. Ships lay like discarded toys in ocean dust, sucked free of all organic matter. Piers extended over bare rock from the dockside. The Overlord flew over the shoreline, and Felix found himself looking down at a city in an eerie state. In places, the battle for the world had leveled blocks. Damage from large-scale bioweapons carved gouges into the suburbs, but impact sites were the exception. The Tyranids' favoured mode of attack was ground invasion. Imperial scholars theorised that it was the most economical means of offence and risked the least damage to their food source. Where cities were concerned, Tyranid methods left untouched infrastructure isolated in a world of dust. Sothopolis was a small city, but there were whole pristine districts where glass still glinted in roofs and ground vehicles waited for passengers that would never come. Mount Pharos dominated the landscape. In life, a green king. In death, a slumbering Egyptian pharaoh. Atop its peak, the fortress monastery of the Scythes of the Emperor stood. The Black Rock Mountains to the east, of which Mount Pharos was a distant outlier, toothed the horizon, and with the fang of the fallen monastery close to the ship, the landscape gave Felix the impression of open jaws about to snap shut. The state of Sotha sank him into a black mood. There was so much to be done. The ravagers of Kraken were the least of the sector's concerns. Mortarion's forces still attacked Ultramar, and large tracts of the jeweled realm were poisoned beyond repair. What could be set right would take decades, if not centuries. What could he, one man, do? The crackling of spiking rad sensors broke his ruminations. They were passing over the area cleansed by Kall's eradication beamers. The instrument noise rose to a crackling crescendo and held there. "We're approaching the Fortress Monastery exclusion zone, my lords," said Daelus. "No sign of activity from the defence matrix. Shields are down. I have minimal power readings from the monastery generatoria."
"Our orbital guns failed," said Thracian quietly. "Our anti-air defences did not last long after that. Kraken has evolved to perfect the art of aerial assault. When we left, nothing remained functional."
"Nevertheless, we should be careful," said Felix.
"Brother Techmarine, take us closer to the mountain," he ordered. "Close enough to trigger close-range defensive responses. If there is no response, we shall see if we can land directly at the Fortress Monastery. That will save us much time and effort."
The growl of the rad sensor climbed abruptly as they crossed some deadly, invisible line.
"Curse Kall's arrogance. This radiation will make our mission all the more difficult."
"It is within survivable parameters, my lord," said Daelus.
He banked the Overlord round. Shore and mountain squeezed the coastal plain, and it was quickly crossed. Mount Pharos opposed them, its soaring cliffs barring their way. Daelus put the ship into a slow, spiralling ascent. Felix observed the world through his retinal display while looking through the window. The Overlord Machine Spirit's auger input pulsed directly to his auto-senses. Although it would be overwhelming for all but the most highly trained mortal, such a profusion of data was simple enough for a space marine to assimilate. An outlying castellum watching over the capital lay toppled at the mountain's feet. A switchback access road crawled upwards from the site of the ruins past hundreds of rounded cavern mouths covering the slopes from foot to crown.
"Incredible," said Thracian. "So many caves. I don't think we knew how many. With the quick trees gone, only now are they visible."
"They were not mapped."
"Some, yes," said Thracian. "All cartographical data had to be gathered firsthand. The mountain had its secrets. It was resistant to scans. Our people say the caves moved, and they're a legend from millennia ago. I did not believe most, but an alarm peeped over the crackle of the rat counter.
Our presence is getting a response, said Dalis. I have signals. Weapons augurs attempting to secure a lock.
Hold at this distance, ordered Felix. What has us in sight?
Short to mid-range weapons batteries. It looks like all the major orbital weapons are down, but I'm seeing LAS, plasma, and missile tracking us. Hang on, no. There's one defense laser active, possibly two.
How can that be? Said Felix. You said the guns failed.
I have no answer, said Thracian.
But I do not lie.
No communications. That's odd. Dalis took his hand off the flight stick and peered at a screen. Trancus, take the helm.
Dalis's co-pilot, wordless as ever, switched control to his station.
What is it?
Felix said. Dalis slid his chair along rails to a sensorium suite next to the pilot's chair. The mortal manning it moved his own seat aside so Dalis could access it.
It could be interference from Call's eradication beams, but these energy readings are a little peculiar, said Dalis.
Peculiar how?
Felix demanded.
Non-imperial peculiar, said Dalis.
He worked quickly at the console.
I'm attempting to shut the defense grid down, but the system is not responding. It should recognize us as friendly. It is ignoring our identification signum chain. That should override everything.
It is an older system, said Thracian. Sotha fell before the Primarch rose again. Our noosphere and cogitator infrastructure was not initiated into the mysteries of the Neo-Tetrarchy. It does not know you. What about the Scythe's codes?
I've tried them. They are also non-effective, said Dalis, distractedly.
The Vox squawked a rush of static. From out of the sleety hiss of radioactive emanations, a stentorian machine voice emerged.
You are entering restricted airspace. Remove yourselves or face destruction by order of the Scythes of the Emperor. You are entering restricted airspace. Remove yourselves or face destruction by order of the Scythes of the Emperor.
A generous warding beacon, said Dalis.
Our fortress was close to the civilian population center, as you can see, said Thracian. The main starport is not far to the north.
What's left seems feeble, my lord, said Dalis, sitting back. The Overlord can take it if you wish to put down. I do not think we're in any danger.
What state are the fortress monastery's hangars in?
Blocked, my lord. Doors shut over three main flight bays, no power to any of them. A couple of the upper landing pads are viable, the rest are collapsed, said Dalis. I could try this hangar, he tapped at a screen. I could shoot our way in, or this landing pad at the northern end.
If there are enemies inside the Emperor's watch, we could be walking into an ambush. The ways into the citadel from the landing ports were made to be held by a few men on their own, said Thracian. Most means of entrance were blocked.
Then I could attempt landing in the outer bailey, outside the main gate. It's the only place that isn't a sheer drop. It'll be tight, but no tighter than the Egidian hangar was.
You would be doing it under fire. Hold position, said Felix.
I will not take any unnecessary risks. Thracian, do you have deeper level access protocols you can provide?
I gave all I had to your brother Techmarine, said Thracian. But I will attempt shutdown myself. Perhaps my voice print will help.
Felix's armor vox popped as Thracian shifted channel.
Emperor's Watch Command Nexus, confirm data breach.
An angry screech of static filled the flight deck. The automated warning resumed.
You are entering restricted airspace. Remove yourselves or face destruction.
No response, said Dalis.
I read increasing power output through weapons systems.
Chapter Master Mansirius Thracian communicates with you, venerable machine systems of my chapter. Confirm data bridge and prepare to commence security net shutdown on my command after exchange of ciphers.
A green flash emanated from the summit. A stripe of laser light sliced past the Overlord, clean of dispersion blur in the voided sky.
Trancus, you have taken us too far in, said Dalis.
The co-pilot shook his head and adjusted their course.
You are entering restricted airspace. Remove yourselves or face destruction by order of the Scythes of the Emperor. You are entering restricted airspace. Remove yourselves or face destruction by order of the Scythes of the Emperor.
It will not heed me, said Thracian.
What are your orders, Lord Tetrarch? Said Daedalus.
Thrown!
He shouted, before Felix could respond. Troncus jerked the stick of the ship so that it slew dangerously to the side. A ruby beam of light speared through the space where the ship had been.
Now that was a defense laser. I recommend withdrawal, said Daedalus.
Do it.
Felix stared out of the armored glass cockpit blister. The mountain lowered at him as it receded.
My lords, a vox message from Archmagos Dominus Belisarius Call,
one of the mortal crew informed them.
He is requesting the Tetrarch's presence and advising ground approach. There is a surprise, said Daedalus sharply. He is at the landing fields of